Was the Midtown Manhattan shooting really just another act of senseless violence, or was it a ritual steeped in occult symbolism, elite abuse networks, and Saturnian mind control? In today's episode, we decode the hidden messages behind the number 27, the Masonic 33rd floor, the Black Cube of Saturn, and the modeling industry's deep ties to Epstein, Deep State Donnie, and the elite's darkest secrets as part of the revelation of the method through a Saturnian death cult ritual. Join me here on Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. Today we've got an emergency episode looking at this July 2025 Midtown New York City shooting by a guy named Shane Tamora, and there's lots of occult symbolism that explores themes and theories of Saturnian control systems and initiations, Freemasonic rituals and architecture, MKUltra mind control experimentation, Charles Manson, Epstein operational elite sexual exploitation networks, and the Jungian shadow transformation using Joker archetypes. So we're going to talk about all these things, the 27 Club, the Masonic numbering of the building in which this took place at 345 Park Ave, 33 symbolism, the Black Stone of Saturn, a little bit of NFL, sports balling, CTE, and model agencies for these elite old rich perverts. It's all here today. Now, the video version of the show, if you're on my Patreon or VIP section supporter feeds at tier 2 where you get the video version of the show ad free, it's going to be a delay on this one because I got to process it all. And you know, this is a late breaking emergency thing, right? I got it before this morning and I started working immediately, and the video is just going to be a couple hours behind, okay? So if you're on tier 2 and you're like, hey bro, where's the video? Sit tight. I'll have it within a couple hours. It takes me maybe an hour and a half to edit it. Then it takes some time to upload and publish, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Okay? Just know it's coming, all right? All right. Let's start off. I'm not messing around today. No shorts, no losses. What happened? I'm going to read you from New York Times. On July 28th, 2025, a mass shooting occurred at 345 Park Avenue in Midtown Manhattan, New York City. The incident began at 6:28 p.m. when a gunman identified as 27-year-old Shane Tamora, who was wearing body armor, opened fire with an AR-15 inside the building, killing four people, including a New York City police officer. Tamora died by suicide. It's the deadliest mass shooting in New York City since the 2000 Wendy's massacre in Queens. The motive is currently unknown and being investigated by police. Now, further on in a different article, I think it's a different article, they talked to the Nevada Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch, and she said that Tamura's car was recorded passing through Colorado on Saturday, Nebraska and Iowa on Sunday, and he arrived in New York City Monday afternoon, drove immediately to Park Ave, where at 6:28 p.m. he commenced to double park his BMW and go inside with his AR-15 rifle, and he, you know, shot the lobby, went behind a security desk and shot one of the victims, firing on another one that was taking cover behind a pillar. Then he goes over to the elevators, waits for an elevator to take him upstairs, all right, lets a woman actually exit the elevator and walk safely past him. And then he gets on the elevator and goes specifically to the 33rd floor. When he gets in there, he goes to the office of Rudin Management, a real estate firm. He shoots someone, and then he shoots himself in the chest. Now, there's going to be a lot more that unfolds with this story, I'm sure, even past the recording of this episode. But even in this episode, I've got more details behind it, but that's the basics, right? First off, let's talk about the shooter, Shane Tamora. He was 27 years old, which obviously refers to a classic in the world of conspiracy, the 27 Club, right? You got all these famous celebrities that die at age 27. And it could be a reference to that. We're going to talk about 33 as well, because that's obviously very important in the realm of the occult. But I'm going to take this 27 Club and take it a little further than we usually do. All right. And in my research, I found something that actually is going to tie into the Saturnian death cult theory. I'm going to read to you from okyorkwright.com, a Freemasonic website. It tells us that in some of the systems of Freemasonry, there were 27 masters who pursued the murderers of Hiram. And that's a reference to Hiram Abiff, the sort of master architect of Solomon's Temple. All right. That's what a lot of these rituals in Freemasonry are devoted to, is the death and rebirth. It's a play on the Osiris mystery schools of Hiram Abiff. Okay, and then it references Boheme, a 16th century German Christian mystic and theologian, calls the number 27 the death. And indeed, he may very well be correct, as modern society has created the 27 Club, a term that refers to a number of popular musicians who died at age 27, usually because of substance abuse or through violence, such as murder or suicide. More than 50 musicians populate this list, including Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, and Amy Winehouse. To add fuel to that 27 Club fire, there's a conspiracy theory that a cult organization caused these deaths. All right. Then later it says, in the Select Master ritual and opening ceremony, we learn that a council of Select Masters can only be comprised of 27 and no more. We open and close our councils with knocks of 3 times 3 times 3, or 3 to the third power, the sum of which is 27. But the number 27 is clearly meant to serve as a symbol for cryptic Masons. And like all important symbols, there is the surface meaning, and then there's the deeper meaning that lies below the surface, which we can use on a personal and spiritual level. All right, pay attention here. 3 times 3 times 3, or 3 to the third power, is a perfect cube. Now, this is a reference to mathematics, which is important to the realm of Freemasonry and sacred architecture. Because, you know, the square of a number, like the square of 3 would be 3 to the second, right? So 3 times 3, which equals 9. But if you cube it, it's 3 to the third. So 3 times 3 times 3. Got it? It's a perfect cube. And the cryptic Masons call it the cubical stone. 200 years ago, the cubical stone was used as the altar for cryptic Masonry, and the Ark of Imitation rested upon it. Albert Mackey says, the cubical stone in cryptic Masonry represents God, and thus must also represent divine truth. So, in the Freemasonic cryptocracy here, the number 27 represents the perfect cube, the cubical stone. Okay? A cube stone is what? It's a giant cube. It's a Saturnian black stone, which we're going to cover in about a minute here. If for my old heads that have been around a while, you already know where we're going with this. For the newbies, hey, I got something really cool I'm going to show you here. I got to kind of bounce around. I got to do a little bit of a cut-up method on this episode because I've got some interesting things and we're going to kind of make sense of this. We're going to go real deep down some real rabbit holes, and then we're going to pop back out and be like, okay, what's going on here? All right. So let's talk about this guy, the shooter. What's his name? I already forgot his name. Shane Tamura. He's actually originally from Hawaii. Then he moves to Los Angeles. Then he lived in Las Vegas, where he was working as a security guard. Supposedly, from what we're being told by the media as of like this recording, which is July 29th and 11:30 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. But he apparently drove all the way across the country specifically to do this. I mean, think about this. Think about this, right? Why would he do this? He loaded up guns and ammo, drove all the way across the country. I've made that drive many times between PA and Utah. Many times I've done that drive. It's a long-ass drive. Then he goes to New York City, gets on an elevator, and goes specifically to the 33rd floor. He did this with intention, all right? There's a meaning behind all this. I'm not saying we should pay attention to it, but because, I mean, like, you know, he's a murderer. Terrible human being. He's going to rot in hell, as he deserves, right? But there's something going on here. Something weird happening here. So he does all this. And then something interesting is that there is this strange pipeline of Las Vegas to Maui. I was texting with my main man, Jordan, last night about this. About how, remember the Maui fires? The police chief of Maui during the conspiracy of the Maui wildfires. He was the same police chief that was in Las Vegas during that other crazy pew-pewing. I think I already said the word. I already said the wrong word. Sorry. YouTube's going to torch my channel, I guess. that the country concert one, right? And another similar weird thing was Luigi. He was living in Hawaii before he came all the way to New York to Manhattan, which I tied into The Catcher of the Rye, which I'm going to put a link in the show notes in case you'll need to listen to that one. That one's pretty good. Link to Luigi, because that one was actually pretty crazy too with The Catcher in the Rye stuff. And I couldn't find any reason. Like, why is this? It could be because Las Vegas is called the Ninth Island. Because Hawaii and Las Vegas are intimately connected, I guess. People from Hawaii love Las Vegas and vice versa. Now, the destination of where this guy went to, Tamura, is curious. He goes all the way to Manhattan to a building at 345 Park Avenue. And if we look at this through the lens of synchromysticism and the occult, 345 is an interesting number because it ties into Pythagoras and Euclidean geometry. When you look at the lengths of a basic right triangle or a 90-degree triangle, you've got a squared plus b squared equals c squared with, the base being 3, the leg being 4, and the hypotenuse being 5. Point is, it's a reference to geometry, which goes back to Pythagoras, who's the guy who invented the Pythagorean theorem, right? And he was actually one of the biggest occultists of all time. He went around syncretizing mystical belief systems and ran his own cult, which we're going to talk about later with cults. Now, the Freemasons, they would use this formula to build things, sacred architecture, because they subscribe to as above, so below kind of thoughts. And it's depicted as the literal symbol of Freemasonry, the compass and square, a square being a 90-degree triangle. Okay? So the 345 is baked into the symbol of Freemasonry. And 345 symbolizes the progression, the ascension, the ladder, in the initiatory sequences of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. You know, the first degree would be your apprentice, second would be fellow craft, third is master mason. The third is the final degree in the Blue Lodge Freemasonry, where there's only 3 degrees. This is the one where Chaim Rebif is killed and resurrected. It symbolizes death and rebirth. But that's where you can start with the 345, and then 4 is the secret master. That's the guardian of the mysteries. And then the 5th is the perfect master. It's a mourning period of Hiram Abiff and, again, facing death with honor kind of idea. So there's a lot of Freemasonic symbolism baked into that 345 number. Now, this building in particular, he got off at the 33rd floor. Well, interestingly enough, there's actually 44 floors in this building. And those doubled numbers, those master numbers, 11, 22, 33, 44, there's a sort of double play on that in this one, because you and 4 represents a square or the cube, the solids, the platonic solids, the earth. But the 33 is an interesting choice of floors for Tamura to decide to go to after driving across the entire country. I wonder if he was wearing a diaper. Remember that lady, that astronaut lady that wore the diaper to drive all the way down to Florida? Anyhow, 33 is quite obviously the highest degree in the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. Invitation only. Lots of presidents make it there. Also represents Christ consciousness. You know, because he died and resurrected at age 33. And it also represents the human spine. There's 33 bones, 33 vertebrae. And in the Kundalini, they believe that at the top of the spine is where the Kundalini goes. It represents full spiritual awakening to unlock all of the chakras in the spine. But in Freemasonry, 33 is symbolized by the double-headed eagle, and it represents apotheosis of man turning into God, which is a common theme we're going to hear about today. Now, what's interesting is that in this building is the headstone, the headquarters, the global headquarters, I should say, for a company called Blackstone. This is the world's largest alternative asset manager. They manage over $1 trillion. They were, I guess, buying up a bunch of American single-family homes back in 2008 during the first crash, and then recently after the pandemic. Trying to figure out where exactly they are in the building. New York Post says they have something like 1 million square foot. They are actually on 28 floors of this building. So to me, in my amateur thoughts, I think it sounds like they basically are the building. But you also find out later that the NFL headquarters are in the same building. The black stone is the most curious of symbols to use for your company, because the black stone is a reference to Saturn. And if we read from Arthur Morrow's Cult of the Black Cube book, he tells us all about it. You'd like to hear it? Here it goes. The use of the term black stone is not accidental. The Picatrix author is aware that the Saturnine idol is itself a black cube of some kind, and is referencing the Kaaba, as Ibn Washia has done prior. Rather, Zuhal is a deity. Zuhal is like Saturn. Zuhal is a deity who guards secrets, grudges, things whispered, and mysteries that are buried by time or other forces. Zuhal is not the god of the researcher so much as the god of the thief, who steals the research of another. He is the patron of grave robbers and archaeologists who crack open the tombs and secrets of the dead, only to hoard them in remote locations. Whenever a movie shows knowledge concealed in a secret laboratory or ancient secrets sealed behind vault doors, that is a manifestation of Saturnine power. So the black cube, because the whole book, it talks about the different versions of Saturn worship throughout the world, and it talks about the basic idea is that the black cube is the symbol for Saturn because it represents Saturn's power being sort of enchained in, they want to unleash the forces of Saturn because it's going to unleash the golden age, they believe. And the way you do that is by unleashing chaos, because Saturn was around before the primordial chaos. It gets really weird, but it's part of the big agenda, because the idea is to instill enough chaos that they could channel this force, this energy from Saturn. This is what the Saturn cultists believe, okay? And one way you could do this is with human sacrifices, blood sacrifices. I'm going to do a book club about this book someday. I just got to find time. I'll do it, because it's actually really interesting. But I've been talking about this a lot lately because it was a super fascinating book. I talked about it on a recent episode of Breaking Social Norms, the other show I do, and last week's Epstein live show that I did on my podcast here. Scroll back to the latest episode if you haven't heard it, because we talk about Epstein and the powers of Saturn, which we're going to talk about again today. I should also note that the shooter was wearing a black jacket and black pants, which is exactly what this book says to do if you're going to do human sacrifices to Saturn. Kind of strange. Now, from here, there's a massive rabbit hole. This is going to take a long time to get through. But we're going to talk about Rudin management, because that's what the news is trying to get us to focus on. They're saying that he got off on the floor to go to specifically the Rudin management. Now, the Rudins are interesting. I looked them up. Didn't know I was going to go down a rabbit hole. it's a family that comes from that that blue and white country, which, look, I don't say that to assign a conspiracy to it. I say that because maybe Tamura did. Maybe. Either way, Lewis Rudin, he was one of the guys who founded Rudin Management. They came from money. Their dad was like a big hotshot real estate guy, and then they either started or continued Rudin Management. Doesn't really matter in the scheme of things for what I'm about to tell you. But Lewis Rudin was married to a model, and her name was Basha Zimanska. And she worked, he hooked up with her through a modeling agency called Wilhelmina. I don't even know how to say it. I'm gonna say W Modeling because I got to say this word a million times. Wilhelmina Modeling was founded by a woman named Wilhelmina Cooper. See, I already got it. I don't need to do the W thing. Just that quick. This modeling company was founded by Wilhelmina Cooper. And it's one of the oldest and largest model management companies in the entire world. Never heard of them before. Strangely enough, she died in 1980 at the age of 40 from lung cancer, which was very strange. And after she died, the agency was transferred to her business partners, then bought in 1989 for $4 million by Horst Dieter Esk, a German businessman with interests in the construction industry. And this Esch guy was having discussions with other modeling agencies. Specifically, it says Elite Model Management and Ford Models to try to make a merger happen, a large conglomerate agency to take public, but it didn't happen. So this is kind of alarming because Wilhelmina actually got her start with Ford Models, okay? So these point is, everyone's connected here, as you could imagine. Something interesting Wilhelmina had in her little wiki bio here, she said, I was on continuous diets. I'm not fat as far as real life is concerned, but I certainly was when it came to modeling. I ate twice a week. In between, it was cigarettes and black coffee. On Wednesday, I had a little bowl of soup so I wouldn't get too sick, or a little piece of cheese on a cracker. On Sunday, I'd have a small filet mignon without salt or any sauce. I was running on nervous energy as well as determination. There ain't nothing in this world that would make me do this. I don't know what the heck is going on here. Twice a week? That's why she got lung cancer. She's smoking too many damn cigarettes. Anyhow. And fun fact, Wilhelmina Cooper, she founded a model named Gia Carangi, who was depicted in that Angelina Jolie movie, Gia. So I guess if you watch that, you can see, I think Faye Dunaway was the character who played Cooper. Anyhow, when I see all this sort of talk about modeling agencies and specifically their collaborations with Ford and Elite, it makes me think of our favorite couple, Jeffrey and Deep State Donnie. I can't stop picking on them. Look, they keep showing up in my news. I'm not trying not to talk about them. So when you talk about Elite Model Management, this was run by a guy named John Casablancas. And he was besties with Donnie, all right? Trump also into modeling. He started the Trump model company, whatever he called it, because he was hanging out with all these creeps. All these old rich dudes loved hanging out with teenage girls, models. And that's why he had Miss Universe, Miss USA, Miss Teen USA. And that's where he met Melania, is through his modeling work. And it's just strange to me. It's like these old men are really interested in modeling, aren't they? Wow. That's what me and my middle-aged male friends talk about all the time. It's like, you know what business I want to get into? Modeling. Yeah, that's really interesting to me. A bunch of perverts. He signed his daughter, Ivanka Trump, up to be in Elite Model Management when she was 13. Anyway, Elite Modeling was run by a guy named John Casablancas. Thank God he's dead. And I'll explain why. You'll agree with me. And if you don't, I don't want to talk to you. His mother was a model for Balenciaga, so you know we're already off to a rocky start because Balenciaga had a little bit of hot water when they had a bunch of little kids dressing with BDSM stuff just a couple years ago, if you recall. Anyway, Casablancas was attracted to very young girls. He would run a thing called the Look of the Year contest where he would have a bunch of models compete for a $150,000 prize. And all these other old, gross, creepy old men, rich old men would get together and judge them, right? And this is where he met Stephanie Seymour from, she was in the Guns N' Roses November Rain video. He met her. He was in his 40s. She was 15. And he very publicly dated her. And he called her a, quote, woman child. He also had contestants sue him for essaying them. One was 15. She claimed that she was impregnated by him and forced to have an abrasion, if you know what I'm saying. He was 46 when that happened. And there was a bunch of girls, 14, 15, a bunch of cases. They all got thrown out for a variety of stupid reasons, I'm sure, because his lawyers are pretty good. And there was probably some payoffs. Who knows? I don't know. Speculation. But when old Johnny Boy died in 2013, there was an obituary article on The Guardian. I'm going to read you from that. It says, in 1990, he sold Elite. That's the Elite modeling, right? He sold it in 1990, which was by then developing a worldwide structure of management, scouting, and training. However, he continued to work for the agency until a 1999 BBC documentary, later withdrawn, why, which showed elite agents in Europe boasting of sex and drug exploits with young recruits. Casablancas was not implicated, but he had enough contention and resigned. In semi-retirement, he still had to deal with retrospective lawsuits over price fixing and working conditions. He continued scouting and briefly advised Elite after its post-bankruptcy, blah, blah, blah. Casablancas was frank about his personal preference for girls of only just legal age, quote, child women. His relationships were far beyond complicated, though he denied the rumors that he had charmed entire portfolios of Elite employees into bed. And then I go to a different article in The Guardian from 2020, and they talk about how Deep State Donnie would also work with old Johnny Boy here for these contests called Look of the Year in order to hook up with young girls. This is what it says. Don't at me. This is The Guardian. It says, Trump was closely involved in Casablanca's competition. In 1991, he was a headline sponsor, throwing open the plaza, his lavish chateau-style hotel overlooking Central Park, transforming it into the main venue and accommodating young models. He was also one of its 10 judges. So later in the article, it talks about how Donnie and David Copperfield were two of these 10 judges, both of whom are on the Epstein list there. Naomi Campbell would give out the prize for the Look of the Year contest, also on the Epstein list. It details even more about, I didn't know David Copperfield was such a creep, but it details a bunch of stuff about how he had these accusations from a girl who was 17 named Brittany Lewis. She was in the 1988 Look of the Year contest, and he invited her to one of his shows. He poured something allegedly into her glass, and she blanked out and hazily recalls him essaying her, allegedly. And then I guess some other girls who were 14 and 15 said similar things about him checking in on them, all creepy. Anyhow, so Trump is really into all these modeling contests with Casablancas, real close, real buddies. And in 1992, Trump hosts the competition again. On a similarly golden evening in early September that year, another group of contestants is boarded the Spirit of New York, chartered for another elite cruise. One of the girls on the boat was Shauna Lee, then a 14-year-old from a small town outside Toronto. She recalls how the contestants were encouraged to parade downstairs one by one and dance for Trump, Casablancas, and others. Lee, an introverted teenager who loved to draw but hated school, was in New York for the first time. A woman at the agency was pushing me, she recalls. I said to her, I don't see why me going down the stairs and dancing in front of those two has anything to do with me becoming a model. And she said, no, you look great. Take off your blazer and go do it. So I walked down the stairs. I didn't dance. I blew a kiss at them, spun around, and walked away. Another contestant, who was 15 at the time, also remembers being asked to walk for Trump, Casablancas, and other men on the boat in September 92. She says an organizer told her that if she refused, she would be excluded from the competition. I knew in my gut it wasn't right, she recalls. This wasn't being judged or part of the competition. It was for their entertainment. Later on, it says, 3 decades on, a very different picture of the competition is beginning to emerge. Over the last 6 months, The Guardian has spoken to several dozen former Look of the Year contestants as well as industry insiders and obtained 12 hours of previously unseen behind-the-scenes footage. The stories we have heard suggest that Casablancas and some of the men in his orbit used the contest to engage in sexual relationships with vulnerable young models, you don't say. Some of these allegations amount to sexual harassment, abuse, or exploitation of teenage girls. Others are more accurately described as rape. No such allegations have been leveled against Trump, who at the time was dating Marla Maples, the woman who in 1993 became his second wife. But his close involvement in the contest raises questions for the president. Did he know that Casablancas and others were sleeping with contestants? Why would a man in his 40s whose main business was real estate development want to host a beauty contest for teenage girls? Journalists have scoured every corner of the 45th president's life, but his friendship with Casablancas and his involvement in Look of the Year in 1991 and 92 have been largely overlooked. Yet the competition is more than a footnote in the Trump story. In time, it would prove to be the foundation of his pivot into reality TV. He even married a former Look of the Year contestant, the current First Lady, Melania Trump, who narrowly missed out on a trip to New York in 92 after coming second in the Slovenian heat. Patty Owen, an Elle and Cosmopolitan cover star, recalls seeing Trump at elite parties as far back as 1982. He would always be at the bar. That's where he would stay, and that's where all the new models would hang out, she says. Whenever I saw him, I was always like, why does John have to invite him? Barbara Pilling, also then an elite model, told us Trump asked her out for dinner in the summer of 89 at an industry soiree. She recalls Trump asking how old she was. I said 17, and he said, that's just great. Let me do it in the voice. I said 17, and he said, that's just great. You're not too old, not too young. Trump now disputes being friends with Casablancas. The president's representatives told The Guardian that he denies it in the strongest possible terms. Trump, they said, hardly knew him, spent very little time with him, and knew very little about him. Uh-huh. Okay. Also, strange enough, they would see him at the bar because he doesn't drink. Right? Do we trust it? Didn't we used to say we wanted... anyway. I'll keep my mouth shut. Okay, so Epstein and Casablancas would also have affiliations. They would trade models and do a bunch of casting call swaps. And in fact, a woman sued Jeffrey because she was 15 and did a casting call where Jeffrey had undressed and essayed her. Then there's also this Ivanka Trump. They had, like I said, they had her modeling very young as well. And she also worked with a fashion designer guy named Anand John, who was pretty problematic. In his Wikipedia, I'm going to read to you. It says, in November 2008, John was convicted at the Los Angeles court of one count of rape and multiple counts of lesser sexual offenses. He was sentenced to 59 years to life. John was facing similar charges in New York and Texas, but before the trial began in 2013, the New York prosecutors accepted his guilty plea, and he was sentenced to time served. John went on to successfully resolve all of his overlapping out-of-state cases in New York and Texas and the very same charges in California. He's currently appealing his conviction in federal court for release in California. John claimed conspiracies put him behind bars. So Ivanka worked with that guy, and there's photos of Donnie with Ghislaine Maxwell attending his fashion shows in September of 2000. So all these people are, you know, very close. Well, going back to Wilhelmina, like I said, she started out with Ford Models, which is closer to the Jeffrey affiliation, because Eva Anderson was a Swedish model for Ford, and she dated Epstein. She's the one that would go on to marry a billionaire named Glenn Dubin. She was actually dating Epstein before she dated Dubin. And Bill Gates, the reason Bill Gates is divorced is because of this exact thing, because, allegedly, because Eva Anderson and her 15-year-old daughter were hanging out with Bill Gates and Jeffrey, and Bill described it as a very attractive Swedish woman and her daughter dropped by, and I ended up staying there quite late. And Melania, years later, would divorce him and imply that it was partially because of his relationship with Jeffrey. Now, Jeffrey, he also had a modeling agency. They all do. They're all really into this. Jeffrey and Jean-Luc Brunel had a modeling agency called MC2. All right. And the, you know, Jean-Luc Brunel got arrested in 2022 and died in prison from a suicide hanging, just like Jeffrey did in 2019. Wink, wink. And then finally, one more weird connection. Wilhelmina, in 1998, the company, the modeling company, would end up partnering with Atlantic Records and created a whole artist division of matching music artists to international branding. And they've done a ton of mixtures of modeling and acting for film and commercials and television. And they've repped huge names like Nicki Minaj, Nick Jonas, Demi Lovato, Machine Gun Kelly, Shawn Mendes, and Billie Eilish. So now let's shift gears and let's talk about sports balling, because another office in the 345 Park Ave is the NFL headquarters, which could be the link, could be the thing we're talking about, could be the reason he went all the way there specifically. He played football in high school, and his friend said, I don't think he walked around to be like, oh, I'll have NFL games one day. I think it was more of everybody just telling him how great he was. He was the fastest kid I'd ever met, full hands down. And then after high school, you know, didn't see from him that much and didn't hear from him that much because he wasn't on the field. And in fact, there's a video of him that was circulating online when he was 15 and he was playing sports ball for Granada Hills Charter School in California. People called him the class clown in high school. Someone, his high school friend said, you never would have thought violence was something you would associate with him. Everything he said was a joke. He was a joke. Do I make you laugh? Am I funny? Am I a clown? He was the Joker archetype. This is the Jungian projection of archetypes from the collective unconscious. This is represented as the fool in the tarot deck. It's the trickster. And what is the trickster and the Joker all about? It's about chaos. It's about making change through disruption. That's what the Joker character is all about in Batman. And the Joker represents the shadow. It's the mirror of society. It's the dark side of society that we don't want to see. And to face the shadow is to confront the shadow. That's why you see people doing shadow work. And they believe that you can face one's own shadow to grow and evolve. And in terms of the Saturnian process, that's the goal. It's confronting the outer guardian of darkness. That is Saturn, the black cube. It's the final test before ascension and enlightenment for apotheosis of man turning into God. Now, he transferred from Santa Clarita School to Granada Hills High School before his senior year 2015, which is where we can tie in some MK Ultra ideas, if you'd like to hear that. I've got that for you as well. Obviously, he had some mental health issues, right? Seemingly, maybe. In his BMW that he drove across the country, he had a bunch of magazines and ammo and prescription medications. Strangely enough, he had a concealed carry permit since June of 22 and a private investigator license. Which, a lot of questions here. Is he on SSRIs? Why did they give him a concealed carry license if he's got mental issues? Bunch of stuff. Says in one of the many articles I had to reference here, Tamura had two mental health crisis holds in his background in Nevada, one in 22, the other in 24. He had a note on his persons, which I'd love to learn more about. I'm going to read you from abc7ny.com. Blah, blah, blah. He carried a note in his pocket claiming he suffered from CTE, asked that his brain be studied, and made references to the NFL, police sources told ABC News. Meaning he had a head injury from multiple blows to the head playing football, which if you've seen the Will Smith movie Concussion, that's what it's all about. And you can see how there was a massive cover-up by the NFL because there's too much money at stake to shut down. They changed a bunch of protocols, right? But the point is that they don't want this to be a common thing that people talk about. Which this also explains why Tamura shot himself in the chest and not the head. He wore body armor, so lots of questions here. But the note, it says that sources describe the 3-page letter as rambling and contain references to the NFL. The references were found to be vague by the sources. I want to know what's on the 3 pages. CNN posted that part of it said, Terry Long football gave me CTE and it caused me to drink a gallon of antifreeze. Study my brain, please. I'm sorry. Tell Rick I'm sorry for everything. You can't go against the NFL. They'll squash you. Now, who's Terry Long? I had to look this up. He was an offensive lineman for the Steelers in the 80s and 90s. Strangely enough, Wikipedia said as a teenager, he was a bricklayer. What's a bricklayer? That's a mason. All right. Strange synchromistic connections here. Because we just got done talking about all the symbolism of Freemasonry to be found in this event. Fun fact, he joined the Army, was in the 82nd Airborne, and then he got recruited to play football for college. He was deadlifting 865 pounds. My goodness. So he retires from the NFL. Starts getting into a bunch of trouble for arson and fraud. He had a business, apparently, he was trying to claim bankruptcy on. But here's where it gets interesting. He died on June 7th, 2005, which this was way before we talked about the CTE stuff. It was determined he had consumed a full gallon of antifreeze, which was ruled a suicide. An autopsy by neuropathologists revealed that Long had CTE, a degenerative disease caused by repeated hits to the head during his career. He's one of at least 345 NFL players to be diagnosed after death with this disease. He had previously attempted suicide in 91 after testing positive for NFL steroid test. Man. And to drink a full gallon of antifreeze? That's a crazy way to go. Oof. Anyway, so he went to... So that's the end of the sports ball theory. Could be a very potential candidate here for what's going on. But what's interesting is that he went to Granada Hills High School in L.A. And if you look that area up, this is in the area known as Santa Susana because it's on the foothills of the Santa Susana Mountains, named after a Catholic martyr, Saint Susanna. Santa, also an anagram for Satan. Fun fact. This area is interesting because in 1959, there was a nuclear power plant there, and it had a partial meltdown, and the U.S. Atomic Energy Commission kept this quiet for 20-some years until the L.A. Times exposed it, and it turned out to be the worst nuclear disaster in U.S. history. Another major problem, they actually restarted this nuclear power plant while no one knew about what had happened. And since the L.A. Times exposed it, the locals be tripping. As they rightfully should be. Santa Susana is also a place where you can find a movie set called the Spahn Ranch, where a ton of Westerns were filmed, and it's also notoriously known as the place where the Manson family lived. Strangely enough, there's a rich history of cults hanging out in this area. May Otis Blackburn's Great 11 Club was there. This is where it was like an apocalyptic cult. Then you had another cult by Krishna Venta called the Foundation of the World. This guy's crazy. Krishna said, quote, I may as well say it, I am Christ. I guess truth be told, I am God. he also was into this whole apocalyptic vision, this cataclysm coming, and he was going to rebuild the world with his cult. Only problem was he got murdered. It's murder. He got murdered by some of the dudes in the cult when they realized he was a fraud and he had been banging out their old ladies. Because, you know, if you're running a cult, everyone knows it's a requirement. You need to give up your ladies. That's why, fellas, if you're into that cult life, you better start the cult. You don't want to be a member because you got to give your lady up. So then you got Charles Manson, who also had a cult called the Manson Family. And he was staying at the exact compound that Krishnaventa was at the foundation of the world in 1968, right before he moved to Spahn Ranch. Manson also made claims about being Christ, also predicted an apocalypse. So I don't know what's going on I don't know what's in the water in Santa Susana, probably nuclear waste or whatever. It makes people trip out hard. Even it was alleged that Manson was going to try to become the new leader of the Krishnaventa cult. But they eventually kicked him out. Now, there's an author that I admire dearly, Adam Gorightly. And in fact, I'm going to put a link in the show notes because he was kind enough to allow me to be the last person to ever interview him about Charles Manson because he doesn't want to talk about it anymore. Because he wrote a fascinating book called The Shadow Over Santa Susana. It's out of print. I think you can get a copy on Amazon for like $60 now. Or I think I got a signed copy. I do. I got a signed copy. Man, lucky dog. Anyway, in the book, he talks about Manson's occult connections with pop culture and all kinds of... It's a crazy read. It's so good. And he... Even from childhood, he had something strange about him. One of the boys named Toby that was at the Federal Reform School in Chillicothe, Ohio, apparently said that Manson had these strange powers and he was definitely satanic. This is in 1952. All right. Charlie would say a bunch of crazy stuff about how he was a reflection of society, just like that Joker shadow reflection reference, and supposedly employed Freemasonic hand symbols. He was talking about how the Freemasons have secret wisdom, and he was also into this ego death thing, which is very much in line with the Saturnian initiation stuff. Manson, also into young girls. He finessed a minister named Dean Morehouse to give up his daughter Ruth Ann to the family when she was only 14. Manson also very much plugged into Hollywood and the music industry through the Beach Boys, through Dennis Wilson, who he stayed with for a period. Supposedly he was doing, him or his family members or both, were into a bunch of variety of things. Allegedly drug dealing, allegedly orchestrating BDSM sex orgies on film, which ties us into the whole blackmail film theory. Polanski, Tate, Sebring supposedly were involved in all this. So the Bugliosi Helter Skelter story doesn't account for any of that. It just says that, oh, well, he thought Terry Melcher lived there and he was mad at Melcher for not giving him a record deal, when other people claim that, no, they all knew each other. Manson and the family were hanging out with all these people, Polanski, Tate, all of them. And Manson allegedly said, don't you think those people deserve to die? They were involved with Kitty videos, fill in the blank, referring to Polanski, who would in fact get later convicted of doing that kind of stuff in the hot tub, at Jack Nicholson's hot tub, when he, you know. So Manson, one of his family members was Bobby Boucher. He was doing Aleister Crowley rituals with Kenneth Anger and Mick Jagger, and all kinds of crazy stuff was happening. And while they were at Spahn Ranch, Charles Manson said, all my women are witches, and I'm the devil. And the women at Spahn Ranch would make a bunch of occult stuff, like a steer skull on top of a stake painted with a bunch of occult symbols on it, and all-seeing eyes and pentagrams all over Charlie's tent. And one of the murders, of the LaBianca murders, ties into a lot of strange activity too. It was at a location called 3301 Waverly Drive, which again ties into that 33 thing, kind of loosely. But it was also, it was where the home of Walt Disney was originally. It's Katy Perry owns the property right there after she killed a nun who called her a witch and refused to sell it to her. Oh, it's a crazy story. But we're here to talk about MK Ultra, so let's stick with that. So Adam Gorelick's book actually told us about this years before Tom O'Neill's chaos. He was talking about how the FBI COINTELPRO was active at the time of Charles Manson and suggests that maybe Manson was an agent provocateur. He also talks about a theory by an OG conspiracy theorist, radio announcer, host, whatever, Mae Brussel. Well, she was talking about the Tate-LaBianca murders and how Waco was part of a strategy of tension. And all of that was to create an atmosphere that would make everyone politically shift to the right in order to erode civil liberties and strip constitutional rights and create a police state. This is the Dark Enlightenment stuff. And part of this could be prompted with a race war to create a martial law police state. That's what I keep trying to like say. It's like, we got to be careful, man. You start leaning on this sort of like fascist police state stuff too much, and that's what we're going to get. Is Mae Brussel a man or a woman? It's got to be a woman, right? A name like Mae Brussel? Let's look it up. I've never listened to... Yeah, female. Man, she maybe one of the first female conspiracy theorists, right? She born in 1922, died in 1988 at the age of 66. I got to look into her a little more. I don't know much about her. I know her. I've seen her name a million times. I don't know anything about her. Anyhow, Adam Gorelick said that MKUltra was messing around with experiments with prisoners at the Vacaville State Prison, which was exactly where Charles Manson was. And he talks about how Ken Kesey, Allen Ginsberg, who's also into kids, Jerry Garcia, were all introduced to LSD through CIA at Stanford. The Manson family could have possibly been an experiment in group mind control because they were, in fact, turned into killers. And that was one of the aims of MKUltra, was to create Manchurian candidates or to see if it was possible to program a killer to go and do a murder and then sort of dissociate and then come back and not have a memory of it for, you know, plausible deniability. A guy named John Judge alleges that Manson was not just using regular street acid, but military-grade acid, which was different because the military-grade, which I believe was done through Eli Lilly, was better for controlling people, apparently. And he says that the psilocybin derivative called EA1729 was the same that David Berkowitz was given while he was in the army. Another, you know, killer. MK Ultra killer. Manson was also released from prison in 1967 and sent to the Haight-Ashbury Medical Clinic, which was sponsored by the NIMH, which also connects into MK Ultra. It goes on and on. And this is just Adam Gorelick book. He talks about Cisco Wheeler, who co-authored Fritz Springmeier's book on mind control, because Cisco was supposedly brainwashed under Project Monarch. But Cisco said that Manson was a Monarch slave and a Monarch slave handler who received programming at China Lake, which is over by Barker Ranch, where he would end up taking his family up into the high desert there. So anyway, Adam Gorelick posts all this. I read this forever ago, 10 years ago, 12 years ago. Now you got Tom O'Neill, a journalist who wrote for decades this book called Chaos, which I always recommend to everyone as well. And he suggests, I would say informs, that Manson was in fact an experiment of MKUltra Project Chaos. And he presents the idea about how the CIA was using LSD to break down egos and rebuild people into killers. The allegation is that Manson was taught these tricks and was experimenting on the Manson family to see if it worked. Plot spoiler, it did. And just like Mae Brussels said years ago, one of the goals was to disrupt the left. In Chaos, it says this. I focused on two secret intelligence operations that were underway in Los Angeles in 1969, FBI's COINTELPRO and the CIA's Chaos. Their primary objective, according to three congressional committees that investigated them in the mid-70s, was to discredit the left-wing movement by any means necessary, an aim that, coincidentally or not, described exactly the effect of the Manson murders. Chaos and COINTELPRO started the same month, August 1967. After anti-war leftist protests broke out. And Tom O'Neill points out about how Charles Manson had all these get-out-of-jail-free cards. He was on parole, but was constantly getting caught violating the law and breaking parole rules. And at the Haight-Ashbury Clinic, a bunch of shady stuff was happening. Crazy stuff. But let's wrap it up. In conclusion, what are we talking about here? The big questions still remain. What was on the three pages of notes? Was Tamura MKUltra programmed to kill, like Charles Manson? If he was, where did he get the programming? I don't see any like military history, but I could be wrong, and it could be too early, right? He lived in that Santa Susana area, which was ripe with strange occult activities and cults and crazy stuff. Maybe it was there somehow. Bigger question, was this part of a Saturnian death cult ritual? Of human sacrifices to a Saturnine deity? Was he mind controlled to produce these sacrifices for the death cult that programmed him to hit those key esoteric numbers 27, 33, 345? And the building is where the Blackstone headquarters is? Who is the Saturn death cult exactly? And I believe that Jeffrey was a part of it all because of all these connections, right, into the modeling stuff. And we just talked in depth on the most recent episode, the live show I did about Epstein's connections into the Saturn death cult stuff. Or maybe it's just a simple, and he got CTE from football and he wanted to lash out at the NFL but couldn't find the floor. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I'm not there. I don't know what happened. We'll see what happens, though. I mean, as time goes by, we'll get more information. But I wanted to break that down for you and talk about the occult symbolism and the synchromysticism of this event. Very strange. Lots of weird things happening. Now, if you like this show and you want to support it, there's a lot of options for you. You can just leave a 5-star review. If you're on, Apple or Spotify, just drop a 5-star review. That helps a ton. If you want to go ad-free, early access, unlock hundreds of bonus episodes, Patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher is the most popular option. Or you can mash the button on Apple Premium and you're in. Simple. Or you can hit IlluminatiWatcher.com at the VIP section. You can copy and paste an RSS feed into your own preferred app and save a few bucks because it's the cheapest because it's the one I manage. Okay? So lots of options for you here, but for sure, stay subscribed to this show for future updates. In fact, I'm dropping a 3-parter on The Shining that you do not want to miss. I keep hyping this thing. I hope it lives up to my incessant hype. In the month of August, we're going to drop it like it's hot, baby. And you're going to hear all about more of these ideas, believe it or not. Yeah, that's right. So thanks for listening to the show. Till next time, stay positive.